I think we're ready to start our meeting. First order of business is call to order. So look about, we're in order. But for the supervisors, I see everyone here except Supervisor Rodriguez. So I think we're complete. We have two youth and governance.
Be a full guidance.
Did that one down.
We could at this point entertain an approval of minutes from previous meeting. Would anyone like to move that?
I'll move it.
Moved and seconded, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Chairman, committee members, supervisor, youth and governance comments. I have none for the moment. Any supervisors have comments they'd like to bring forward at this point? Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got an email from a constituent over the weekend, concerns with our agreement with Parkside and the mountain biking organizations and county ordinances. So I'm going to forward that to you and Matt. And if you guys want to respond directly, or I can, or what have you, I figured you guys were the best people.
Good.
So, thank you.
Thanks.
Anything further in terms of supervisor comments? How is about the governance? Any comments? Criticism? Questions? Just want to know. Seeing none, we can move on to division reports. And Mr. Dreyer, your first one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've completed our irrigation blowout and winterization of the golf courses and the clubhouses. We've officially closed Brightondale Links as November 19th. And Petrifying Springs is still open. In fact, last Thursday, I think it was 54. We had 112 rounds that day, so it was great. We had a tremendous golf season, and in part due to the excellent weather. Our next biggest initiative is our special holiday golf clearance sale at Petrifying Springs. We've gathered all our merchandise from both facilities, and our guests really enjoy the event and great savings on golf merchandise. Hours of operation are 10 to 8, Monday through Saturday, and we're going to be closed Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day. We're looking forward to a productive off-season, booking groups, restocking the golf shop, tuning up equipment, freshening up the clubhouses, and getting ready for the 2022 golf season. We've added an additional golf simulator. Should be up and running this week. We're just waiting on IT to get some ports ready for us, so we'll have two at the clubhouse. We anticipate that we will be busy this winter again like we were last year. We're excited about operating this equipment because it allows our golf patrons to enjoy golf, take lessons, work on improving their game, and getting fit for new equipment. We also this year are offering 96 golf courses, great golf courses from across the country. The system enables us to virtually play golf at some of the most recognizable courses across the country. We've completed all of our aerification. That we got the new deep tiner this year, and it worked really well. We got quite a bit of all the fairways aerated at Brightondale. Plus, we did the Blue Spruce golf course, and with the deep tine air fire, and then we core aerified the greens at every other course. We will be core aerifying the Blue Spruce in the spring, and deep tining the rest of the course. And this is a new process for us, and it's really going to improve course conditions by effectively relieving the compaction of the turf following the busy, heavy traffic golf season. Things that we're still working on is we're working on getting 10 large trees removed out at Brightondale and doing all the brushing of the areas that grew back when we did it a couple years ago. So one last thing that we are, we had a retirement. Tom O'Dell was our superintendent, and has worked at Kenosha County Golf for 30 years, 32 years, I think. And he retired this fall, and so we're going out with a search to fill that position from outside the organization. So looking forward to getting some quality candidates and getting a new person in there to make the golf course as sweet as it was the last couple of years.
How were you able to do this past season in terms of having staff for all of the golf operations carry through the season? Were you successful? Do you have thoughts going forward?
We were light in the fall. We were pretty well staffed all the way through the season. We got real light in the fall in food and beverage, especially at Brightondale, and then our maintenance facilities, both places got real light in the fall also. So we're going to start recruiting again. Everybody that ended up the season with us did say that they wanted to come back to start the season again next year in maintenance, which is a real feather in our cap. So it was good quality management. But it's as far as, you know, food and beverage is always a challenge. And the golf shops, I felt, were adequately staffed throughout the year.
You had started fairly early last season to interview and to recruit, is that correct?
Last two seasons, yep, and we will definitely do that again.
So going forward this season in terms of staffing, is there any significant difference with some of the things you discussed in the first standpoint in terms of
We plan on providing some, especially for the long-term maintenance people, an additional dollar per hour to start and moving forward.
So. I see the frame is good.
Yep.
Maybe just explain to the community if they don't already know the difference between core and deep tine aeration.
Okay, deep tine air fires are about 9 or 10 inches long, and they're solid, and they just go down. And as they come out, they shake a little bit, and it opens up the turf so that gases can escape through that process. Where core air fryers can only go down, 3 to 4 inches, and it goes in with a hollow tine, and it grabs a core, and it ejects the core out, and then we have to take all the cores off the green or in the areas that we're doing, and then release the compaction, but in a more shallow area. The two different processes put together, the deep tine will penetrate deeper, and the core will even relieve more compaction by taking out part of the turf. So
especially for the heavier trafficked areas.
Right.
So the greens receive alternate core and deep tine aeration, is that correct?
Currently, because we bought the deep tiner last year, so that's the first time that this is going to happen.
What is the procedure for the fairways? What's the usual customary for them?
Well, we have been core aerifying them, and now to try and get deeper, we're deep tine aerifying them. And that's going to break that kind of a shell area where it only was down 3 to 5 inches. Now hopefully we're going deeper than that, and it's going to allow better drainage and better flows of the actual gases that get trapped underneath the clay.
Is that more of an issue out at Brightondale than it is at Pets just due to soil condition?
No, it really affected Pets where we're doing the cart pass. We had all that heavy truck traffic. That was, and then a lot of the walk-on, walk-off, drive-on, drive-off areas by the tees and greens.
Gotcha. Very good. Any questions or comments for Mr. Dreyer before we move on? Supervisor Bell.
I was just curious why you're cutting down so many large trees.
We have 10 dead ones. Well, there's plenty more, but currently that's what we could afford. To cut them down, and they're a hazard to our golfers. So,
okay.
Yeah, we have many, many more out there. With all those tees out there. Unfortunately, with the drought the last 2 years that we've had, it takes the big ones take a beating. Really suffer from not getting that moisture.
Are they just pines or oaks or maples or?
It's a combination. There's a lot of different species that are. There's quite a few deciduous trees, there's a lot of different species that need to be removed.
Thank you.
Just the last follow-up before we move on, unless somebody has something else. I had spoken to Mr. Collins earlier about the golf entrance at Petrifying Springs in County A as you look to the east. There's quite a big tree canopy that overhangs that. And I think our discussion was, Matt, that, you know, from what you can do from your particular perspective with equipment and so forth, it was done, I think, and trimmed back. But there were sight line issues, and also, as you've discussed, Clement can testify as well, when you have overhanging vegetative canopy, it tends to allow the moisture to stay on the road longer. You have soils that get freeze and thaw type situation. So between who's ever available and appropriate to look at the area immediately east of Gulf Entry on County A, let's see if they can get trimmed up as it needs to be.
It's so scenic.
It is scenic.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Not to trim it off completely, which make it better than it is. Supervisor Franklin.
Yeah, Matt, just out of curiosity, do we rely on Mother Nature for watering our trees and plants? I would imagine so, because it would be pretty difficult to water them all. Or do you, is there a policy at a certain point that we water them if they go into a drought, or if they're only new trees, or what's the policy there?
Good question. So the first year that we do plantings, and typically we plant trees that are between an inch and 2.5 inch caliper, so they're more robust, especially from the public traffic and a lot of our parks where we put them in open spaces. So it's the first year we're on a watering campaign that at least once a week we either water them with a water tank in a truck, or we have gator bags, are called, where you actually put the bag around the tree. And that happens through the first growing season. We like to plant when they're dormant. So actually right now is the best time in the ground to get a tree in. And they're already dormant, and then they got all winter to basically have that precipitation and snowfall to use that through early spring, so they have more resilient time to really get established with their root structure. Then we water on that at least a weekly campaign, and then you see what Mother Nature does that second year. So sometimes you get lucky and you have a wet year. Sometimes we need to go in and intermittently actually water, especially during the dry season, July, August, and sometimes September. And then after 2 years, you're pretty much good to go. It's on its own, yeah. And you just got to watch out not only with watering, but oak wilt is definitely a thing still. Fox River Park, they're cutting down trees because of oak wilt. So there's, it depends on the species of tree, how resilient they are to Mother Nature, changes in weather patterns, different insects, bacterial things going on with the trees. And for instance, with oaks, you can only cut them when they're dormant. So we have to have the right skilled staff throughout highways, golf parks that know what they're doing, and one to water, one to treat, one to prune. Just to better take care of them that way.
Okay. Anything else, Supervisor?
No, thank you.
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you. You said we were hiring a superintendent. Do we post that internally and not get any applicants?
It is posted internally and externally. It is a really a highly specified position. So, I mean, as far as looking at internal candidates, I mean, our assistant superintendent, Randy Schultz at Braindale, would be one. We talked to Ryan Rutherford at Petrifying Springs. He would be another qualified candidate. But other than that, we don't have a lot of internal candidates that would have all the pesticides and agronomy background that would be needed for that position. So,
and have those two individuals expressed interest?
No, they have not at this time.
Right. I guess that's something I would be curious. I don't know them. You know them obviously probably better than anybody else in the room, but are they near the end of their career? They don't want to take that step? Is there something that we're not doing? Because we talk about retention, not just with golf, but countywide. To me, that's
I believe it's the latter. That's for both people. You know, I've talked to them, and that's the situation at this
time.
Thank you.
Project. half of the project starts now, since the trial is over. It's the two first floor washrooms, the men's and the women's. We had a pre-construction meeting today, and work will start actually tomorrow morning. Third one is a new one. It's called the Security System Hardware Software Upgrade. It's a $224,000 project to upgrade obsolete door security and HVAC software hardware throughout all county buildings. Work has started on the 29th of November, and it'll wrap up the end of January.
Who's the contractor for that?
It is Kane Energy.
Was that KCAP today?
No.
Any questions for Mr. Mike Schramm, Andy?
I was in Judge Doug Villo's courtroom last week for a personal reason. I noticed the wallpaper above, I think there's a wall unit that he has. It looks terrible. It looks like it's peeling off. If it's possible that we can do something with that. Other than that, I got nothing.
Oh, the other thing is, in our chambers, if you take a look at the vents, which are up on the ceiling, the entire tiles are, I don't know what I call them, stained, or they have just accumulation of dust, debris, whatever.
This is the committee room on second floor?
Third floor.
Oh, boardroom.
Boardroom, right.
Okay.
And especially more so towards the east and west.
Dusty.
Yeah, there's something.
Probably the ones
around
you.
Right by the right.
I don't know if you would have to go for a vehicle for doing the chair position.
Are you sitting in the sample one?
Yeah.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, because they figured since my back surgery, it would be helpful, really helpful, and I think everybody would benefit from the reupholstery.
Just to let you know where we're at with that. That was a trial one, obviously, to satisfy you.
Uh-huh.
I think everybody's like, it's so far. I won't go there. I'll stop right there. But what we're looking at right now is also doing the backs.
Oh, okay.
Not that there's a problem with cushioning, but it's more aesthetics. The fabric that you put on the seat, is supposed to be getting matching all of the colors. So
it's much more comfortable.
We're going to see what the cost is, and if we can do it and we have the money, we'll do the backs as well so they match.
Just take it out of the chair.
So we're getting costs out of it.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the guy that did actually had surgery, and he's not back until the end of January. So I asked my building chief to reach out and see if we can press it a little bit. I think he has surgery meds.
Thank you.
Look in your crystal ball, what's going to be happening in your facilities division for next year?
I'm going to be retiring. Let's put it that way. That'll be the big run. So we've been preparing for that for a long time. We actually have our HVAC maintenance technician in place to replace me. I've been tutoring him for quite a while now. My hope is he'll be better than me in the long run, and I think he will be. We hired his replacement. We stole him from RCI. So you don't have him anymore, but he seems to be a real good one, so we're real high on that. Other than that, just the busy projects we're meeting tomorrow to assign him to me and Frank and Matt, I guess.
When do you retire?
One day in April, probably mid to the end, I'm not sure yet.
You make sure to let us know.
Yeah.
I imagine he likes us a lot better because we spend money where they... There's so many things that need to be repaired there.
That is exactly what it is, just so everybody knows that. I mean, around here, we're proactive. Mm-hmm. It's a very important thing to understand. And
very important.
It saves us a lot of money, and it keeps many of our things, assets, and buildings from being down. Especially in the 24/7 buildings where they can't be down. It happens sometimes, but you try and minimize that as best you can. So just being proactive and right at it, let's save money in the long run. Then we're back to reactive, it'll be a bad fit. So it depends on the philosophy from above, I guess, to promote it.
Mike explained to me in the interview process that the guy just lit up because it's a typical government operation where you wait till it blows up and then you quick scramble around and figure out what to do about it. And the guy just said, I can't do this anymore. we want to go somewhere where people actually plan and are strategic about stuff. So
yeah, it's so many years of doing it that way, it's just rolling crazy. As soon as we told him we were proactive, yeah, he lit up. He really did. And it's so, too long band-aiding things. And as a maintenance person, that's not the way you like to do things. You don't want to see things break, and you hate to fix them halfway or the wrong way just to get by for a little while. It's not an efficient way to do it. It's not productive, and it wastes money.
Just a couple of housekeeping before we move on. First of all, anything else for Mr. Schrein?
Curious then, what was happening in KCAP? There's no doors at KCAP. There's a big opening in the building.
We're about in the front?
In the front, yeah.
I believe Frank's project was starting.
That's right. Yeah. Don't steal Frank's thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, Frank's here. We need to see him.
Just a couple of housekeeping items before we move on. I'm not entirely sure if I asked for citizens' comments when we finished off with Ian.
I don't think so.
No.
Did you have anything you wanted to address, or just here for something else?
I'm here for voting rights.
Okay. So no harm, no foul there. And I don't see Supervisor Nudo here. So
right.
I said they were all present and accounted for, and I don't see him. So
and you sent a note to that he wouldn't be able to make it.
Okay. I didn't receive one. Mr. Martinelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll start off with KCAP Molinaro security modification. The KCAP and courthouse door replacements are scheduled for December 6th through the 17th. That's exactly what you saw. We started with KCAP. This is a culmination of since actually the riot. The doors, they pulled, bent, warped. The doors pretty bad. They were able to bend them, shim them, get them to work, but you know, working with the insurance, we said they're just not light and they need to be replaced. The hardware was bent up. So, but then we went through a process with the insurance of documenting what we had, things like that. We also did look into alternates for the glass that goes in there, something that would resist, you know, future attacks, stuff like that. We did a deep dive into all kinds of different options. So bottom line is then we are ready to do it. Materials, then the trial came up, so the decision was made not to do anything during the trial, so the trial's over, and that's why we're changing out the doors or replacing the bent and warped doors with new doors. So that's part of that under the insurance. So KCAP is first, we're doing that, then we'll be doing the doors around the courthouse. So that leads right into the next thing. Part of that deep dive was trying to harden the building to a future attack. We looked at a lot of different options, some extraordinarily expensive, but we came up, the Department of Homeland Security uses the 3M window film, and it's caulked to the frame, and you can get bomb resistance. The glass will still break, but it'll hold all together. So we actually rolled that out at the Molinaro building when the DA was getting some real private threats. We learned our lesson from that one. Now we're going to roll it out to take that once the doors are done. The KCAP enhanced security transaction counters, we awarded the PO, and we're scheduled, and this is what this handout was all about, was to get some views. It's tough to tell because it's glass and it's transparent, but bottom line, this is the same basic design for the transaction counters that is at public safety building for the police, the sheriff, what used to be joint services. It's a baffled system so that you can hear, you can talk around it, but instead of just having that, you know, flat kind of speaker that you're talking into, it's an open area concept, so it doesn't look as
gorgeous and menacing.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, that you still, you want the public to be able to transact and things like that without feeling they're going to check into the jail or something. So, any questions on that piece of it?
So this is just the prospectus before the bids have been awarded, or where are we at in that process?
The bids have been awarded, and they're acquiring all the materials, and we have construction scheduled for July and the finishing date.
Who's the contractor?
I'm going to get the name of it. Bukicek Construction. They're out of the same.
Yep. And substantially complete when?
June.
Good.
Yeah, working with the contractor, we'll actually compress the schedule zone. So if there are no further questions, we'll go to the Civic Center campus. Design, construct parking lots, substantial project completion, and scheduled opening of the parking lots by year end. There's a fence in the front and some limestone pillar that we're hoping that it'll be, we might have to wait till early spring once the weather for the mortar and things like that go in. Go in our favor. No questions? ACDC HVAC replacement phase one. Construction start to set here, start before the end of December and will be complete by the end of March. And Kemper water infiltration repairs, we're wrapping that up and will be complete there by December. And then we'll make a plan for project.
They started, completed, where they at with that utility relocation of the companies.
Is that Kemper Center? So we just finalized through the board for that easement, so that had to be approved before anything was scheduled with their construction crews. Most likely this is not considered winter work, so it'll probably be forwarded on to spring of next year. Correct.
Anything for Mr. Martinelli in terms of what we discussed at this point? Seeing nothing for your report,
it's the
Mr. Mayor, nothing else.
Excellent. I'm just going to pass out the Pringle Nature Center report. I noticed about an hour ago these weren't included. That was my fault, Wendy. I didn't include it over here. So we usually put in the naturalist report with the commission report. So the first thing that we have is the review and approve of the 2022 park entry fees, rental fees, and dog park fees. So for the committee this evening, I'll try to break it down. There's been a couple proposed changes for this evening. Every year in December at the Public Works Committee meeting, we typically do this because we start to reserve our pavilions. More so at the beginning of the new year, January 1st, we open that up for online reservations, so it's good to do all these housekeeping things on an annual basis. This gets approved through Public Works Committee solely. It does not have the need to go to finance and the full board. So what we're going to discuss today will be reviewed, hopefully approved, and then we'll be able to post those fees for the general public going into this new year. On the second page of that handout, highlights and a spreadsheet kind of looks like this. So if everyone had time to review that, there are a couple of proposed changes from one year to another. There are changes because we just received notification from the state DNR. Every so often they do an audit of our parks or receive grant funding. Silver Lake Park, along with a lot of our other parks, receive state federal aid of some sort. And it's called the LWCF. That's part of our stewardship. So stewardship we apply to very successfully on an annual basis. And when we apply and get our awarded funds, there are certain stipulations that you have to follow, either through the state or tied directly to the federal agencies. Some stuff's housekeeping, the quality of parks, upkeep. But unbeknownst to us, with 1974, when we were awarded Silver Lake Park through the LWCF, there is proposed entry fees that stipulate that you cannot exceed double the fee from resident to non-resident.
Oops.
Yep. No one really knew that, and who checks through the 1974 document before we made that change? We made that change the previous year, where we took the, as you can see in some of the sheets, the non-resident went up substantially to $25 the previous year to help us out with our budgets and making sure that we could have people go to the park, but yet socially distance, all that good stuff. So the DNR.
It's primarily COVID.
COVID, exactly.
So that less people.
Less people, and we could control that. And we only allowed a certain quantity of people into Silver Lake Park. So for all those reasons, we changed the rates. And especially, we kept residents the same. Non-residents went, I think, from $10 to $25 for their daily fee. So now we had to figure out a way to not exceed that double. So what you see in front of you with the highlights would put us back into compliance through the state DNR. So we tried to outline those from what the current rates are in the one section to the proposed rates. And everything else that's not highlighted would stay consistent with what it was in previous years. So I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Committee members have questions on this particular item. Supervisor Belsky.
Why are we going up? Is it because of the way you have to structure it? But resident parking is now $5 more.
Right.
And why are we doing $5 more instead of decreasing the non-resident parking?
It's more so, I'm going to say, budgetary and revenue. Because if we brought everything back down how it was 2 years ago, now we're taking a dramatic hit on our revenue if we went back to what it was back in 2019 versus 2020 and 2021. So what we did is we wanted to make sure that those revenues are still pretty consistent with what they were in years past between last year and going into this year.
Well, because we had good numbers last year.
We had very good numbers.
I'm just concerned that residents may not be happy with seeing a $5 increase.
So the one thing I would say is it's been 19 years since we raised resident fees. So almost 20 years without touching those. I went back into our history and our records. So not to say that we really didn't want to touch them. It wasn't really our motive to do that. But in order to keep our revenue where it was, in order to have lifeguards, which we intend to do this year, and provide those services, we try to be as net zero as possible. So we like to have those revenue streams in place. And this is the best way to do it without bringing everything back down to historically how it was, because then we're going to have like almost $90,000-$100,000 deficit if we did something like that.
Okay.
Supervisor Byrd.
And if we did leave it at $5, to be in compliance with our rules from the federal government, we'd have to take our non-resident down to $10.
Correct.
And then we'd be losing more revenue.
Yes.
Okay.
Supervisor Palmerville.
Question about the annual residence parking. So going from 30 to 50, and it might not be a fair comparison, but what is like a state park sticker? What is that?
I bought mine a couple of years ago. I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head, but I could get that too on something like that.
Okay. About that. For a year or for a one-shot deal?
For a year.
Go up there once a year, pay like $13 for a couple day pass, and it's $20 right here.
And so here we're looking at 50. Just to be honest, it seems high. Anybody else kind of feels that way as well? I mean, 20 to 30 is a bit more comparable. It seems high. What are your thoughts on why 50?
How I look at it, like, we're members of all these types of annual things through the community, either a Zoom membership, and usually they market it as, if you go five times, anything beyond that, it's basically free. So if you look at the daily fee for a resident, we're open, you know, from Memorial Day to Labor Day, so you have 3 solid months plus that you can be at that beach. So if you go enough, it's definitely worth it to get that annual membership, because as soon as you reach that threshold of that 5 times, anything after that is basically you're making money off of that, or it's not as expensive for you to do so. So it's advantageous in the beginning of the year if a resident really wants to take advantage of Silver Lake Peak. I recommend to do that earlier and then just take advantage of that park amenity.
What are the questions on fees?
what percentage would you say out of Silver Lake is non-residents?
I do. Non-resident for the daily is about 68 versus only 12% for resident. And then the annual non-resident is 6% versus annual resident is 4% for the total lump sum of what we get for the revenue. So if that helps you out. So a lot of our fees are for non-resident daily. It's almost 70% of that revenue stream.
And what is it for annual?
For annual, together with non-resident and resident, together it's 10%. But if you split it, annual non-resident is 6% of our total revenue, whereas annual resident is 4%. So non-resident 6%, resident 4%.
Close to.
So is this the beach or is it the park as a whole?
Just the beach. Just the park itself, other than the beach area, is free.
Okay,
so all the other park amenities are free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Further questions or comments?
How many visitors do we get there every year, roughly?
I would have to say, because we have the vehicle toll, you're at over, going to be close to 10,000 vehicles. And if you times that by even three per vehicle, you're at 30,000. And that's not even including the annuals, because we don't count those day in, day out. So you're getting a lot of people through that vehicle.
Do you know how many you sold in the last year? How many non-resident annual passes you sold last year?
116. And 275 resident passes.
Mm-hmm. So the majority of the annual pass holders are residents, not non-residents.
Correct, because the fee disparity between the two make it seem.
Probably lower, the non-resident is 60. Because I'm with Supervisor Powell, but $50. That's
I don't think
money.
That we should lower, though, the non-resident. That should stay high, because it's like Illinois State Park there. But you can't. You have to do 50%.
Right.
That's the dilemma.
Yeah, it has to be 150 or 60.
I mean, an out-of-state park pass for the DNR is $38. So we worry even more than that for our residents.
I think that's also that's the state park, not a state beach. You know.
It's also every state park in the state of Wisconsin. Yeah. This is one.
One, right.
So anyway, I think Supervisor Rodriguez had the floor of Palo Verde.
Well, that's just my concern, is that I understand why we're doing that, but I'm telling one of my constituents that we raised from 30 to 50, mm-hmm. and we've left the non-residents the same, even if I'm telling one of them, well, hey, they're paying 100, and I explain to them, well, we have to stay within 50%, why didn't you just lower theirs to 60, mm-hmm. leave ours at 30? Or maybe bump ours a little bit and take theirs down a little bit.
Yeah, we were trying to be as equal across the board with basically doubling everything. So there would be that incentive built in wherever possible between resident and non-resident.
So it is a conundrum. It's not a... Supervisor Franco?
I was just going to ask, has there been a determination of the average amount of residents who attend over a certain period of time, like over a season, the average time has gone to Silver Lake Park is 3.5 times or 10 or 50, whatever. Is there any indication?
We have not tracked. Yeah, once you have your resident pass, we don't keep a log of the specific vehicle and how many times they utilize that. They just have to show proof through a tag on their specific vehicle.
Just curious.
Supervisor Palmeville.
And again, probably not an accurate comparison, but what's Lake Geneva like as far as beach passes?
They do it per person over there. And again, I don't have the identical numbers with me at this time. But when we ran the numbers before, we were still fairly competitive compared to a Lake Geneva, because we usually would do a multiplier by two or three per car load at the very least, and we were still a better deal than a Lake Geneva.
Supervisor Belsky.
My comments would be to keep it raised at this time. I feel that the non-resident should be higher, because being a resident, if I have to pay a little bit more, I'd rather pay a little bit more knowing that I have a better chance than a non-resident using our taxpayer perks. So I would keep it at the $100, only because I think that it sends a message that the priority would go to our residents, even though it is more expensive because we have to stay within that formula. So I would say let's keep it where it's at, so it maybe discourages non-residents from taking over our parks.
What did we spend the money on this year because we didn't have lifeguards?
So it's basically goes into the revenue for our levy for operations. We don't really itemize it where one washes the other, per se. If you look at how the budget book, and Jim could probably explain this more, it all goes into the overall revenue and expense, and we try to make those projections on an annual basis of what we can have for revenue that will offset some of that tax levy, and that's just how it's done for the whole entire division.
I'm not going to support this solely because of that one line. Our residents out in Silver Lake and districts like Supervisor Palmville, they pay property taxes, they pay into the levy, they're paying this, and I mean, to raise us $20, that's to me astronomical. We had a year where we didn't spend that money, so the idea of, well, if we want, like, for the lifeguards, to me that doesn't make sense because we didn't have lifeguards last year and we didn't raise the prices last year. So I think that's kind of a way to hide behind that, raising these fees. You just told us that the majority of these annual pass holders are residents, not non-residents. This hurts, in my view, are the residents of Kenosha County, the residents that use this beach, especially when the cost of living and every aspect of life has gone up, to then hit our taxpayers again with another increase. I'm not going to support that. I would encourage the committee not to support that either. We can lower this, the non-resident fee, to 60. There's going to be an implication of that. But you have to also look at, that may encourage non-residents to visit the beach as well. The cost has come down. Visit our county beach. So I won't support.
Are you offering a moment?
I mean, I will. I'm not sure if I have a second, but I would offer an amendment then to lower the non-resident parking to 60 annually and leave the resident parking where it's at.
And I just want to clarify, then it would just be dealing with the annual part of it, not the daily part.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, I see what you're
saying. So if I understand your modification, your amendment to the proposal, you are saying annual non-resident parking would drop down to 60?
Correct.
And then for resident, what would it be?
It would stay at 30. And I get, Matt, you said it hasn't changed in nearly 20 years. So for me, it's easier to sell to my constituents, hey, we had to bump up from 5 to 10 for 20 years. I mean, if you want to go inflation, I'm sure it's even more than that. That's okay to sell. It's on par, I think, with the non-resident. But... Yeah, so that's my motion.
First of all, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
I'll second it for the sake of discussion.
So, motion and second. On the topic which we're just talking, which is Supervisor Bruce's amendment, anyone want to speak? Supervisor Palmer.
So I know most of you know I work with nutrition and poverty and everything for the western part of the county. And through some data we were able to collect, it looks like in the western part of Kenosha County, we run between 40% and 65% poverty for kids in school. And so I just wonder, what are the portion of the people who visit this park that $50 would just really ace them out of being able to go to the beach. It's questionable for me just because even for myself personally, looking at the $50, would I spend that? And I'm not quite sure. If I was a family with a couple kids trying to make ends meet, I think it could be out of the some people's budgets. I know there's other beaches. And I'll finish in just a moment.
Supervisor, go ahead. You show the floor.
Yes. And I guess really that's my thought. Is it affordable at 50 for families who live in that area, even in Kenosha County in general? So, yes.
We're going to go down the line. Did you have a comment, Jim?
Yep. How many out of county residents are there that buy this pass? It's like 50? No, it's 116.
There's 116 versus 257.
So if we go from $100 down to $60, how many people is that? And how much money is that we're talking about in a $180,000 revenue budget?
How much?
Okay. That's all I wanted to point out. We're talking about, to do what he's saying, we're talking about peanuts. And more people might even come.
Good point, Sam.
So
we're going to go right down the line here. Anything further, Mr. Cuffert?
No, sir.
Supervisor Belson.
Really good point, Supervisor Rodriguez. I'm so torn in this because I can see what Supervisor Rodriguez and Palmaville are saying, but it also concerns me that we get so many non-residents using that, you know, especially day passes coming into our parks and filling them up. Since Jim has said that it'll impact our budget very little, I'm going to vote for the change. Not to be flip-flopping, but I think it's a good thing to do.
Anything further, Supervisor?
No.
John?
Yeah, so I guess the issue then is the relationship between how much, by lowering the non-resident parking for the year by 40%, would that encourage more, I'm thinking out loud here, would that encourage more of an incentive for out-of-state people to come? Would that be more than keeping it as it is for the annual resident for a year at 30, or would it encourage more than discourage? Encourage more out of state versus discourage more for in-state? That's really the issue at hand. Now, Jim mentioned something. Can you repeat that again? You said the numbers really quickly, and what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying if Supervisor Rodriguez was lowering it from $100 to $60, that's $40. Times the number of passes that were sold. The budget, the revenue budget for this segment of parks is $180,000. So if you pull $5,000 out, and is that a big deal?
And not
well, my comment is my comment is a question.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm going to say one other thing. What's happened at Silver Lake Park in the last 2 years is a phenomenon. Because of COVID, everybody stopped doing everything else and they flocked into the park. You might not see that with COVID, and I'm saying nothing against our park because it's a great deal, but that's what's happened. The last 2 years are like an aberration. They've been way over budget. We've far exceeded any our wildest dreams of how much money that park, that beach would take in without lifeguards. So to answer your question before, if you get the same amount of levy if you don't have the lifeguards or not, so you spend less. So the levy would be the next year if you didn't have, could be less. So it could have a positive effect on that. But you're talking about $5,000 for half hour. So I'm going to say that.
Now that's based upon the assumption, I'm going to make a short comment here, that doesn't affect usage and utilization from the annual non-residents who say, oh, it used to be 100, now it's 60, now I'm going to go ahead and jump in. So it's always going back and forth. Anyone else want to wait in who's not spoken yet? Yes, go ahead.
I just have a question. Do you have an idea how lowering the annual non-resident parking by $40, how that would affect the non-resident parking for vehicles with daily pass?
That's exactly what we don't know. Well, the only thing that we know based on historical trends is that a lot of your non-resident pay daily, that they don't take advantage based on the data that we have. For whatever reason, maybe there's just one-time offs and they come in with their family for a picnic and they never come back and there's a lot of non-residents. But we don't find that they really take advantage of those annual passes. But like we talked about with the debate, is if you make it so much of an incentive that you can pay for it after only a couple times, are they going to take more advantage of that? Maybe get your money revenue on the front end, and then they never come back, and then you win. Or the gamble is, do they take a lot of advantage of that, and you do have reoccurring customers, and now you actually lost money that you would otherwise get on that daily. So there's a lot of what-if variables that we've already kind of discussed internally. You're bringing up exactly what we've discussed before we propose this. Unfortunately, it's a conundrum, again, that the state brought to us. We're trying to find out what's the best for our constituents, what's the best for that revenue of what was in our budget. But I think these are all valid concerns. I think that these are all valid points that we need to hopefully agree upon so we have the best thing moving forward and still be compliant with the state.
Anything further, Supervisor Rodriguez?
I see Andy had his hand, so I'll defer to him if he wants to say something first.
Yeah, a couple things. We charge per vehicle. We don't charge per person, correct?
Correct.
Somebody had asked earlier about Lake Geneva, and Lake Geneva charges $8 per person for the beach. And then when you look at their parking rates, for Walworth County residents, it's $160 for every 2 years, so they're paying $80 a year. So I think we're still well below them. I mean, just in the fact that we're not charging people for just to use the beach, just to go to the beach individually. I get it, you know. I get the point. But I still think that, I mean, we have to abide by this. We still have to keep our revenues where they're at. I mean, again, it's only $4,640. Below $5,000. Something that came to my thought was, is it even legal to provide to organizations in the county a discount coupon for those that fall below a certain level so that we're not kicking out those that are below a certain poverty level? Is that something? Because I know the city provides bus tokens, for instance, to a lot of the shelters. Is that something that could be considered or thought of?
I don't know if we've ever done that specific thing for organizations. I know Dan does it for different types of raffle prizes for a lot of nonprofits and things like that, like giveaways and promotions. But I don't know if there's ever been strictly discounts for individuals or maybe economically disadvantaged organizations that help out those types of individuals. So I don't think we've ever checked on that before.
Anything else, Supervisor?
I'm good, thanks.
We're going to go around in a clockwise circle or counterclockwise in my case. Did you have something, Chris, you wanted to mention?
Well, with the raising of the resident parking to 10, I don't really know where the debate's standing. I don't know where thinking 5,100 or thinking more 30-60. But when you start pulling off the ratios, I mean, you would even at least be in the middle. At least you're doing four times the difference. Because before, resident parking was 5 and moving to 30, that's, you got to go 6 times in order to get it. Non-resident 25 to 100, you have to go 4 times, to equal that. Mm-hmm. If you go to 30 and 60, now it's 3 for each. You, like Matt kind of said, you could be gambling on losing money there, or at least if 5,100 was completely off the table, I mean 40, 80, at least you're still 4 times. You move in the middle, you're not at 3, not at 5, if you're at 4, it's a little bit more of you playing around to me. But that's all I have to say.
You're going around the circle. Anything else, Chris?
No.
Supervisor Pomville, anything? Joe, myself?
I would just say that when it comes to, there's like the FoodWise or SNAP and EBT and WIC, that what you can identify, but I think doing by car, it makes it very difficult ticket discounts, it would be better like per person, you know, because you could have one person that, you know, say has a SNAP card, but the rest of the card doesn't. So how do you charge? I think if we charge per person, we could do something like a discount, but maybe it is something to look into in the future. You know, it's not a bad idea to try to help people. I'm still torn on this, but I am leaning towards keeping our resident prices lower.
On the annual. Which is what we're discussing here.
Yes.
Supervisor Rodriguez's amendment.
Yes.
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts. The way I've spent my time on the county board is not to make money off the residents. To make it that fourth visit, I won't support that. I won't amend my motion to do that. But speaking on my motion, we have to consider, too, the outside spending that these families, individuals spend, the spending that they do when they come to Silver Lake Park. Are they bringing their own lunch, but are they going out to a local restaurant? I mean, they're spending money in the community as well. Maybe they stop somewhere to guess before they... I'm assuming most of these non-residents are Illinois residents, not neighboring counties, I'm assuming. Are they getting their gas here before they go back into Illinois because it's cheaper here than it is across the state line? Things like that, getting lunch. Are they stopping at one of the rural supermarkets out there because it's cheaper?
The Dairy Queen
I've seen where the line is crazy long. I think there's benefits to having these non-residents come up into Kenosha County, not just because they're seeing a gem that we have in one of our parks, but they're spending money elsewhere. They're helping small businesses. They're contributing to the sales tax that we take in, the county takes in. And so I'll leave it at that. So I won't amend the motion. It is what it is.
Seeing no further discussion on this matter, I think we'll do this in a roll call vote. Jen?
So one other question. What was the you had the absolute number, 257 to 116. What does that break down in percentage of annual resident parking for out-state, in-state?
Of total sales, I gave a percentage.
Oh, total sales.
Total sales. So it was 6% of the annual non-resident parking for total sales, and then it was 4% for annual resident parking.
Real quick, I'm looking at your numbers here. I don't know if you put these numbers out. Of the non-resident versus resident for just daily parking passes or daily parking, it is 68.8 of non-resident to 12.2 resident. So there already is a disparity, you know, a large amount of.
Yeah. So by considering the amendment on the table, lowering it to 60, which is mentioned, in principle it could encourage a lot more out-of-state residents. The question is, and if you left it at 30, it would not be a disincentive for local residents.
Right. Yeah, that would be my only concern, is how much are we going to take a hit on that non-resident daily parking, which is a bulk of our sales. So again, you can try it, see how it goes, and report back on this later. And again, on the front end, like Jim Cuffer said, as far as right now with our projections, it's insignificant. But if we go back and do a recap, we can talk about this next December or even after the season closes and say, lessons learned. We had a shortfall of $20,000 instead of
$4,640. I think mid-season we should have a beach party and go there ourselves.
Right after Pringle.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything further? Representative Kirkman, would you like to weigh in?
I wish I would have spoke during citizens' comments because it is a gem. I walk it a couple times a week. And the people that walk it every day are the people who live there. And people like Tom Carver from Paddock Lake, who are low income, that literally during the pandemic, it's what saved these people. So to go from, and he buys the resident pass, and to go for him to pay $20 more would be a stretch. You know,
it would only be if he uses the beach.
He does. He parks. Okay. He comes in and parks.
So he goes
in the summertime,
beach.
Because in the summertime, they park and walk the trail that I see. So
yeah, walking the trails wouldn't impact him.
Right, but he drives from Paddock Lake.
Yep.
And he parks.
And parks. And then as long as he parks and walks anywhere in the park, so there's no charge.
But he can't walk the hills. Because again, these are older people who walk the straight path that goes from Silver Lake to the beach down, because he won't even walk down the hill. So there are just a segment of people who come in and park, and they're local residents, and they walk it. They park at Silver Lake Park because they want to contribute. They love it. I mean, there's another gentleman who lost his son last year. I went to school with his son. Again, they all meet up on the trail. And then I email Matt because they pick up garbage and I pick up garbage and we all keep it clean.
Very well. Well spoken. Thank you. If we have no further comments, Supervisor Kirkman.
I will say, you know, after hearing what Supervisor Kirkman said and looking at the parking fees, and I know this is the city of Lake Geneva, but, and I already know where I'm at on this, but in the future, if it's something to look at of how we can do like a 2-mile radius or 3-mile radius around the park, so that we're not impacting those that are living in that close area. You know, I don't know, I'm just trying to come up with thoughts, because Lake Geneva City, it's free for residents. And I know we're a county entity, so I understand there's issues at that park, but it's just a thought.
So. There is bicycle and walking fees for only $1. So for those people that, I know that they drive to get to that destination, but those others that live in proximity, okay, there are more economic alternatives.
Very well. We have a proposition on the floor made by Mr. Cruz Rodriguez. In the category of annual non-resident parking per vehicle, that would be reduced to $60. We're going to have a roll call vote. Let's begin with Supervisor Berg.
No.
And Supervisor Pownville.
Yes.
Chair votes aye.
Supervisor Belsky votes aye.
Rodriguez, aye.
No.
So we have 2 no's and 3 ayes, is that correct? It appears though the motion passes, that we will have the reduction then as proposed from $100 to $60 for non-resident annual. Anything else on the fees that we should be talking about? I think if you look at your data,
the 30,
nothing
Chairman.
Is changing for the pavilion rentals, that is going to be staying the same. Matt?
Can we receive clarification with the amendment that the annual resident parking is going from 100 down to 60, and also that the annual resident is going to be going from 50 to 30 based on the proposal? Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we document.
And that the other proposed rate changes, the daily ones, are approved as is, or are you going to do a separate?
No, they're approved as is.
Okay. As recommended.
At least to this point. Now, if someone wants to bring them up and everyone kick the cane, you can do that.
I think we just need to have a motion to approve all other charges as
correct.
Is.
Okay. So who would like to make that motion? Supervisor Belsky.
Second.
And Secretary Breath Rodriguez. For the balance of the entry fees as proposed in this documentation before us, we'll call vote. Supervisor Burr.
Aye.
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 The rate is passed. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Moving on to the division report. Just a few items this evening. Boundless Adventures finished their season back in November. Just a couple updates with their guests. They had over 21,000 guests participate in 2021, which is 19% increase from even last year. So really good numbers for them again this year. Eagle Scout projects. We had 2 Eagle Scouts finish their projects. Matthew Siki finished the construction of a new kayak rack. You can see right off of County Highway F if you haven't already. It's for the Fox River Park boat launch. We're receiving a lot of non-motorized water activity, especially in this area. So people want to even come from any of our 4 kayak, canoe launch sites. They can dock them right over at Fox River Park. They can lock them up if they have their own lock and enjoy the rest of the park for a while. So really nice amenity there. And then David Glindell completed the construction of a new kiosk within UW Parkside property that's part of our multi-use trail expansion, just so we can put informational maps and any special events or anything else. So really nice kiosk over on Parkside property. As far as Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park, you can see the attached renderings of the front entrance signs, both off of County Highway F as well as KD, that were also approved by the Veterans Memorial Park Work Group. Old Settlers Park, Band Shelter. So we did not have luck when we went out to bid, just with the lumber prices. We actually had a design for a prefabricated band shelter, so there's only specific manufacturers that were really able to bid on that first time around. So not knowing that the pandemic would throw all our numbers off, we decided to simplify it, very much the same structure, but we can use timber that we can buy from local lumber mills like a Blifer, Dar, Union Grove Lumber. So hopefully that'll help our bidding prices, but the only way to find out in these turbulent times is throwing it back on the street again. So with that, the redesign's pretty much wrapped up, and then we're gonna rebid that as soon as those documents are complete again, hoping for better pricing. As for the Petrifying Springs Park and UW Parkside Multi-Use Trails, the first pedestrian bridge actually was completed last week with our operations crew. We just have to do some minor grading on both aprons just to do some backfilling, but that one's substantially complete. We're moving forward with survey and design for the remaining four pedestrian bridges. And then as I pass around the Pringle Nature Center report for your reading pleasure. And that is all I have.
Let us go back to Veterans Memorial Park, front entrance signs off of County Highway F and County Highway KD. Are they supposed to be exact duplicates of one another? Will they appear to be the same?
The only difference, well, we already know because there's two separate entrances and it's not a thoroughfare parkway where you can't get from one end to another, that we're specifically identifying which access point you're going in. That'll help out with emergency rescue operations. If someone says, well, I'm in Veterans Memorial Park, and they ask where you are, hopefully they know if either it's Freedom Lake entrance or the Honor Plaza entrance. So it'll be specifically labeled on each one of those signs. And that's really the only difference between the two different
signs. Will each entrance have something similar to this, or is this just a one and done?
That is what you asked for when you met with Ray.
Correct.
For the restroom pavilion.
You see there? That's the only
change.
Okay,
so that is going to be at which juncture?
So that one's Honor Plaza.
Okay, so that's off of F. Okay.
And that's Freedom Lake, which is off of KD.
Okay.
Understood.
All right, so I'd ask him to review these right here, which the veterans are reviewing, because it was our interest as a committee in mind specifically that this be done in good taste with enough presentation the sponsors would be happy with it, but still making our focus upon the veterans and not over commercializing the whole affair. So I don't think any action is needed at this point, but each representative, each member of this committee should have some kind of comfort level on pictures right here. And if you don't, then we can speak up at some point. Anything else, Mr. Matt?
That is all I have.
How did we do with the beer garden revenue?
So beer garden revenue, actually, I knew that the question would be asked. We had 78,000 and some change in revenue this year from beer garden. And Boundless Adventures had 76,000. In revenue. So a total between the two is 154,918.
Okay. So activities catching up to drinking.
They go hand in hand.
How long is our remaining contract with the beer garden?
It's
a multi-year, right?
Yeah, it's a multi-year. I think we have another 4 years or so, because we were able to extend it beyond the initial 5-year term.
But I think most of us have visited the park. I think they do a good job there. I mean, they're always making upgrades. It looks nice. It's clean. It's well run. You know, it always seems to be a good face, a good presentation for Kenosha County from my perspective. So I don't know what you're saying, Mr. by subcomment. Comments from Mr. Collins before we move on with something Supervisor Palmagal.
So just real quick, back to the Veterans Memorial Park signs. Do you think it's just a matter of people learning that this is the Freedom Lake and this is where I entered and this, or because everybody's used to KDF or, you know, they've got those names. Do you think it's just a matter of people learning that that's what the entrance actually is instead of the entrance off of KD or the entrance off of F?
Going back to it, I think the more that we can, because even for special events, if you think of it that way, hopefully we have more veterans-affiliated events that maybe people from the region are from out of town. They might be confused of how to get there, and if we can label something right at the entranceway, that they're at the right entrance so they're not waiting by the lake when you have something at the Honor Plaza, I think that's beneficial just for people to go into the right entranceway. And then, like I say, for safety and security purposes, that if someone, you know, God forbid, has to call 911 and they're trying to find where they are in the park, if they have something like this that they remember entering by the lake, oh, I'm on the Freedom Lake entrance, hopefully that expedites any rescue operation that way, too.
Further comments or questions from Mr. Collins on anything related to parks?
What is that made out of? It looks like stone, but it has grain like wood.
Good question. So we're trying to be very similar with the materials we use for the restroom pavilion that we'll be constructing next year, as well as each one of the memorial shelters that kind of shape like the star at each point of them. And then the front entrance sign is all poured in place concrete, but it's got a rough sawn timber look. So you actually put within the pour of the concrete, you put little slats of timber. So it's got a little bit more of that design and feel of more of that natural element than just concrete post on there.
Thank you for your report, Matt. We appreciate it. We'll
Thank you.
Talk to you again next year. Clement?
I was hoping that by now I need to leave, so.
You hope my hair would have snow?
We're timing you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding our general operations, I think we are all set. We are ready for winter operations. Having said that, we are also doing our routine maintenance that's typical of this time of this year, shouldering, brushing, crack sealing, and trash pickups. And for the state also, we, apart from the routine maintenance, we also did some projects on that one. Still it's concrete spot repair. We also did crack sealing on 45. And of course, we also did those joint filling along Highway 50 following the diamond grinding project. On project updates, County Trunk Highway S, we had a well-attended ribbon cutting to mark the opening of the project. That took place on November 5th. Of course, it has been open since then. Most of you have driven it, and the contractor is currently working on punch list items. Some of these punch list items will spill to next year due to material delivery challenges. So you'll still be seeing from time to time trucks hanging here and there, but it's technically open right now. County Trunk Highway K, the Department of Transportation is still reviewing the plans. They're taking their time, but we're still on schedule for construction to occur next year. So right now, utility relocations are ongoing, and just keep our fingers crossed that nothing derails it, but we're hoping to complete the project, I mean to construct the project next year. County Trunk Highway Y and County Trunk Highway A roundabout. We had a public information meeting on December 1st. It was well attended. I think I say about 20 people. I was thinking we're going to have just like four people. I was surprised to have about 10 people. So we're currently doing right-of-way appraisals. They're collecting right-of-way information to develop, to compile all the appraisals. And we're hopeful that by April of next year, all the right-of-way would have been acquired. That would set the stage for construction to start early summer of next year. County Trunk Highway WG Bridge. Bids were open. By the way, these projects are all managed by the Department of Transportation, like County Tonhavi, WG Bridge. So we are just monitoring it and to make sure that they do things according to county standards. So bids were open on the 8th, and the apparent low bidder is a Granite Construction Company. I think they're out from Waukesha. And the bid came at just slightly over $900,000. County Tonkawi U and County Tonkawi O Q round intersections. The project is on winter shutdown at the moment. However, the utility relocation is ongoing. Hopefully, they'll be completed before they resume construction next year in April. County Trunk Highway C intersection improvement. Right-of-way acquisition is still ongoing. This is a very slow process, but it's inching slowly. We are hoping to maybe complete it by the end of the year. Utility relocation is scheduled to commence early 2022. And construction is mid-summer. The exact date will be determined when the right-of-way construction is completed. And because we cannot construct it at this concurrently with County Trunk Highway U and Q intersection, so we'll have to gauge it very carefully to make sure that by the time they start construction, Highway Q and Highway U will be open. Otherwise, two entrances to the freeway will be closed. So we're hoping that it will start sometime mid-summer of 2022. County Trunk Highway JB, we are currently reviewing the design. The design is complete, so we are reviewing the design and I will be advertising shortly before the year ends. And we hopefully will be constructing early in 2022. County Trunk Highway MB Bridge. This one is scheduled for reconstruction in summer. We just advertised it, and bid opening will be sometime very early in January. Hopefully to start construction early March. County Trunk Highway KR, the usual bridge construction is going, paving at the usual locations. But however, they are preparing to have a winter shutdown, and they're just taking advantage of the weather. As soon as the weather go south, then I'm sure it's going to
close north.
Okay, when it goes north, then we get the winter shutdown. County State Trunk Highway 50 reconstruction project. Most of the construction between 118th to 8 is almost complete. They're just doing final touches. They're doing filling, restoring the medians and doing striping. We still have a lot of barrels, but within the next few weeks, I think it will be open to all three lanes in each direction. And then the construction between H and East, the East limit will continue as much as they can during winter, and then hopefully will be completed next year, 2022, by the end of 2022. And State Trunk Highway 50, the biggest project of all from I-94 to the West End to O. That one is finally complete. It's open to traffic and it's quite smoothly. But let's hope that it holds up. And we assisted them by using the mastic filling. You can see some black spot and some cracks, some joint potholes. That was done by our crew. We assisted them because we told them that it would be going to be a disaster if those potholes are not filled. Well, we'll see how it goes. State Trunk Highway 32. Again, this one is just a projection, so if just in case any of you drove there, I didn't get the opportunity to drive there today, but it's supposed to be substantially complete, and the contractor is working on punch list items. That's all I have.
questions for Plumman. Supervisor Dawson.
Yes. Regarding A and 22nd Avenue or Y, is Summers paying for that water main to be moved?
Yes.
Okay, how much is that running about? Do you know? Is it like 300,000 or?
I don't know the engineering estimate. I'll have to take a look. I don't know.
So why is the municipality having to pay for that? Because we're constructing it right around two county roads. Is that how we normally do it?
Yes.
Well, we're accommodating their project.
Okay.
So we're just coordinating it so that he worked closely with them so that they had this separate project since the intersection was going to be worked on. Mm-hmm. Made sure that everything was coordinated so they wouldn't, we wouldn't do something and then they'd have to come in and blow something up and do it, or vice versa. So it was well coordinated between Plumbing.
It was, even though Mr. Stoner had an issue with the cost.
Mr. Stoner have been doing all his best to get me to pay for it.
No, he's giving you donuts.
Yeah. Usually, utilities are responsible for their own facilities.
Okay.
And the water main is a village utility, and we offer them a right-of-way permit to install their utility and maintain them. So it's just, okay. That's just how it is.
I just wanted to clarify that. And then my other question is, and Ray, just don't get upset or anything, but with the mapping system that we have, the GIS mapping and how we have road closures now, and so in the case that we get like a really bad storm, is it possible to do like status of how the plowing is going on GIS?
We land info. They actually do.
Do you have that?
Mm-hmm. So we do have our own software that we can monitor the trucks at a given time. But that's just for our own, to facilitate our own operations. It's not information that we give out.
So, and I wouldn't want the operations of the truck to be public, but it would be nice to know it when there's bad storms, which roads are closed.
Yes, when we close down road because of weather inclement or maybe flooding,
uh-huh.
Oh yes, we do post those.
Where is that posted? Because it's so hard to
typically,
find.
We typically do it on Kenosha News, and then we informed.
But nothing on our website.
We do. Joe Potente has been very good at doing that.
Okay.
Website and Facebook, you name it.
Well, I just wish that some of that stuff could be on a primary page because. You know, you have to scroll all the way down to news, and depending on where the news is, you know, it should almost be like an alert on our page so that people can see it, is my thought.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe we can talk to, IT and say, can we put a banner at the top of the page, a scrolling banner, and
But you say that there is something now on GIS that shows the road closures? Because I've never seen that.
No, I thought we were going to do a map using GIS with road closures. Didn't you ask for something
originally? We had talked about during construction season having a more comprehensive what was open, what was under construction, that type of thing. Necessarily for inclement weather.
Yeah, but they kind of go hand in hand when a road is closed. It would be nice to let the public know. And since, you know, we do have a pretty hefty budget for IT department and they are using ARPA, they have additional ARPA funds, I think it's something for us to look at to make the public aware of which county roads are closed or open regardless of what's going on, whether it's maintenance or if it's flooding or snow.
Well, let's have a discussion. Who's the oversight committee for IT?
The finance.
Okay, yeah. Bring that up to the finance meeting.
Okay.
Get them going on that.
There's definitely options for doing that kind of thing. Yeah, I didn't think there was anything currently with the GIS, but there's definitely options for doing that kind of thing.
Okay.
Clement, when you started out, you were saying that these projects we're looking at here, most of them are state projects. Are these all state projects on this front page, or just the first three, or what?
No. They... Most of them are state-funded projects, and some of them will require some of the funding programs will require the states to manage the construction management. But again, we are very in tune with the state to make sure that it works. I take that back. It's not most of them; it's just some of them.
on number two, the County K project, that's going to start early next summer, summer 22. Is that a one-season project?
Yes.
I like that.
And the road will be closed.
I'm more conservative on that. Clement assures me it's great. There's two railroads involved. Mm. Anytime we got the railroads involved.
And there's one who is especially difficult to
right. So I hope, and I hope, but I'm more conservative.
Thank you for your report. We wish you well in this upcoming snow season. I'm sure you have your fingers crossed waiting for the next event.
Thank you, sir.
Anything else for Mr. Clement before we move on to Ray? Ray?
Just a couple closing things. As you've heard tonight, you know, there's quite a few projects that we just are wrapping things up. And we actually made quite a bit of progress on starting new projects or getting at least queued up to do them. Even though there were quite a few things taking place in November, one of the most disruptive things really was the trial that went on downtown. The Civic Center campus, in terms of Mike's folks, obviously the Sheriff's Department, but I mean, DPW was kind of profoundly affected actually by how much stuff needed to be coordinated, and there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff that was going on 24 hours a day for the whole time that trial was going on. All the divisions now are fully prepared for winter operations. We've been scheduling, we've got a meeting tomorrow, Frank and Mike and I, to go over facilities so we can set up projects next year, what's planned again, so we can get everything accomplished. Doing the same thing with Clement on Wednesday. Two big initiatives that'll come to the committee most likely in Q1 of 22 is a county highway access management plan that we've talked about for a while. Clement had a meeting with all the municipalities 2 weeks ago to go over that, had a positive meeting, got some feedback that's going to be incorporated into that access plan so that we can bring it to the committee and onto the full board. Like I say, planning for Q1. Also, the Highway S project. One of the things that we've tried to do after these big projects, since the county really hasn't done a lot of these until the last few years, there's always these little remnant chunks of parcels because we've picked up right away, the road's been constructed, there's these little remnant pieces that are left. We're trying to keep up with that as those projects wrap up, identifying those little remnant parcels, and if they can be sold, taking care of that. So we're doing that with Highway S, and we threw about the sixth iteration of a plan, and that we're going to bring that to the committee, if not January, in February for sure as well. Highway F, we had that all in place beforehand, and we're working through actually a process to get surveys of remnant parcels out there, as well as appraisals done. Those parcels out there are very saleable, marketable properties. Most of the ones on Highway S are literally 1,300 square foot to 4,000 square foot chunks of property that are adjacent to one property owner. They have no marketable value or very little. So kind of different things, but we're trying to wrap up loose ends as we go along so they don't accumulate, and over time you got a bunch of stuff that the county's responsible for maintaining. We want to avoid that, and so we're going to start bringing that stuff to the committee in first quarter next year as well. So there'll be a bunch of changes next year in 2022, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of opportunities for us to improve DPW. So that's pretty much it.
As we know, JB is closed because the bridge is out, but for a certain group of individuals, it will be open this winter. Ray, take it away.
The snowmobile, the very active snowmobile folks want to make sure that we don't start demolition too early so that they still have snowmobile trails. It's a mainline snowmobile trail that goes across JB, and there's a way we can configure things so that safely will accommodate snowmobiles but prevent vehicle traffic. Because there's always a few knuckleheads trying to go around the barriers, but we'll be able to set things up so that we can accommodate that. Get us to March, and then, assuming bids come in good in January,
yes,
we'll be able to do demo of that bridge in March, get the table set so we can start construction as soon as the weather permits, and get that thing back on track as quick as possible for the public.
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Question about the courtroom.
The ceremonial?
Yes.
Okay.
So we had our meeting last week, the fundraising group.
Okay.
And it was brought to my attention, I think for the first time, that should the funds come in enough, we would, is it replace all of the windows as well?
I think so. The base project is from the where the wall meets the ceiling and above. Then there's the murals,
right,
that'll be replaced.
They have windows in the rendering. It's like they said, part of the study they found that the stained glass, the stained glass in the skylight.
Oh, you're talking the skylight?
No.
You're talking
there, there was stained glass in the skylights, but then those huge windows, those were stained originally as well.
No, I know there's no, there's nothing to put stained glass windows back in the windows.
Because I was, as cool as it looked, I thought, looking from the outside, you'd have decorative on the outside.
Right, and no, yeah,
okay.
No.
Okay.
The only other thing is the lighting, I know, got added. So
yeah, we went over the lighting.
Okay,
yeah, that
so yeah.
Okay, so maybe they just put it in there for art. I definitely have something where they have like, these elaborate stained glass windows. They look cool, don't be wrong, but I just thought it would look strange on the outside.
I don't recall, now Frank may... You know, there's a lot of stuff floating around up here, but I don't think there's any plan to put stained glass windows back in the windows themselves.
Right. Yeah. The other thing to touch on is this building here. Through a budgetary process, we are going to consider doing some remodeling, making the second floor accessible. Where do the bids and specs come from that in our 2022 moving forward, who's responsible when we see that?
Yeah, so that project, I'm in the process of handing that project off to Frank. It's one of the things we're talking about tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And then CUNY is the architect for that, the primary architect. We'll probably have some sub-consultants for some of the specialty things, the dispatch center and the EOC, that kind of stuff. But yeah, the bottom line is we've got pretty darn good concept plans. And now we move into the bid level drawings, that development process.
Okay.
Haven't set up the schedule yet, but we're going to have to get that, in my mind, have the bid level drawings done by May, June, so that we can get that out on the street. Probably won't be that long of a construction time frame. I'd say it'd probably be a 3 month of construction time.
So we'll do the bid documents.
Once we get the bid documents ready, yeah. And the biggest thing could potentially be some of the specialty equipment, given the supply chain issues that plague just about everything right now. I know some of the rooftop units for the KCDC, there's 28-week lead times for generic rooftop units now.
No, that's not the ones we've already put our bid on, because those were done...
Right, and they were ordered already.
Months ago.
Yeah, they ordered them. But that's what the lead time is on that
current
now. Yeah.
At a 15% premium.
Yeah, right. Then the prices went up. Yeah.
If we made stuff in the United States, we wouldn't have shipping issues.
Here, here. Anything else before we adjourn? Representative Kirkman, anything to weigh in on? You're quiet back there. Characteristic.
I'm listening. I'm learning.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'm going to show it to you. I found it.
Okay.